Chapter 15. Star Destroyer Chimera to Slave 1. Fett, change of plan. I need you to seize a Star Destroyer for me. Before you ask, yes, I know that'll cost extra. Message from Admiral Dalla to Boba Fett. Awaiting orders 10 standard minutes hyperspace jump from Fondor. Anakin Solo, inside Fondorian space. Kytus felt stronger now, but the raw energy of the battle link with his commanders, built up and discharged into the minds of the Fondorian shield technicians, hadn't yet returned. Exhausted, he had to rely on the natural skill of the commanders who'd rallied to him. Two Fondorian frigates circled the Anakin Solo, pounding the shield generator dome. He was also sick of hearing the Othel's repeated signal to all GA vessels.
All ships, Colonel Solo no longer holds command. You are to pursue and disable the Anakin Solo, or, if necessary...
Traitor, he whispered. Traitor. Traitor.
His voice rose to a snarl.
Traitor! Shut that calm down, Einandrar. Look at her. She thinks she's a martyr. A hero.
Kytus jumped up and stalked to a holochart showing the close view of Fondor. GA ships loyal to Neothel were formed up with the Fondorian navy, blocking Kytus's fleet by forming a defensive barrier between Fondor and its attackers.
She's spending our lives to shield the traitors. She's throwing away Alliance lives. What does she think, that Fondor's going to make her a national hero now? They'd better, because she's never setting foot on Coruscant again. Never!
Einandrar paused and waited for him to return to his seat.
Yes, sir.
The Anakin Solo's executive officer now filled the breach left by Captain Neville. He was doing his best, but it wasn't enough. And when Kytus found Neville, he was another traitor who would die.
Sir, there's...
Neville's betrayed me too, hasn't he?
There's one escape pod missing, and Captain Neville can't be found. But...
Kytus considered just jumping to hyperspace and fighting his corner from Coruscant. But that was just fatigue talking. He had a fleet here, and the battle wasn't over.
Save your time. I don't feel him on the ship.
Sir, the Imperial Remnant... The fleet is turning toward us. And Lieutenant Vela is calming you.
Kytus was too thinly stretched to read much from her in the Force. Was the Remnant rejoining the battle to finish him off? He groped around for a sense of danger, but the carnage and chaos of the engagement drowned out all detail. He was under fire on all sides.
Lieutenant, go ahead.
Sir, Admiral Pelion is dead, and the Imperial Remnant is rejoining your forces.
She said it calmly, as if it were a routine thing to have achieved. A subdued ripple of approval passed around the bridge crew. Kytus veered between prizing this loyalty and knowing that they had no choice but to fight, seeing as the Anakin was now the prime target, and they were stuck in it.
But they're still here, and Neville isn't.
Kytus gestured to Einandrar to take over and move to a comm station where he wouldn't be overheard.
Did you finish the job yourself, Tahiri?
I shot him, sir.
You've probably saved the Galactic Alliance.
I didn't feel much of a savior. He was just an old man.
But Kytus noted that she had done it anyway. No sentimentality. No weakness.
How do we get you back on board in the middle of this, Tahiri?
It's going to be difficult.
We'll do it. You're still in Bloodfin, yes? You'll be safe there for the time being.
I'm stuck in Bloodfin. The crew mutinied, and the commanders are trying to regain control. We're on emergency power. Environment control only.
Tahiri seemed to lose her detachment for a moment.
We were taking fire from other Imperial ships until the Moffs called it off. They've transferred the flag. But the senior Moff commanders are all stranded here.
I'll come for you, Tahiri.
The crew can't hold those sections forever. When the fighting's over, they'll be able to send any number of ships back to storm Bloodfin.
And perhaps not be too careful who they blast when they try to get the Pelion loyalists out. I'll still come for you when I can extract myself from this.
He could feel her now that he focused. She was unhappy, not afraid, full of doubt, but not about getting out of Bloodfin in one piece.
Are you ashamed, Tahiri? Are you ashamed because you killed an old man?
Tahiri didn't answer for a moment.
It's not quite the heroic role I had in mind.
But you did it.
Yes.
Tahiri, in the long term, it's easier to kill a powerful enemy than it is an apparently weak one. If you bring down a giant, you're a hero. If you kill something weak, even if it has to die, then you endure contempt. Being willing to be despised, to serve the common good, that's the mark of a true Sith. You're going to make a fine apprentice for me, Tahiri.
Oh, I'm official, then.
Tahiri had a way with bathos that he thought was simply banality, but she seemed to use it as to diffuse situations she found too awkward. Then again, she might have been subtly mocking him.
You may call me Darth Kydus. I shall be known only by my true name from now on.
Yes, my lord.
And I'll come for you, Tahiri. I won't abandon you.
The tide had turned. Kydus sensed another cog turn, shifting every part of the whole machine of existence. The galaxy was an altered place. The majestic power of an Imperial fleet joining his loyal ships felt like the rush of energy in his veins from eating a sustaining meal after a long fast. There was something else, some other harbinger of great mechanical power and energy, but it was hard to pick it apart from the growing excitement of a fleet about to throw everything it had at the enemy.
"Sir, the senior Imperial commanders want your orders,"
Einendrar said, as if he'd repeated it several times before and got no response.
"Let's give Neothel the fight she wants, then."
Three Imperial cruisers moved in to open up a furious barrage on the frigates harassing the Anakin, catching one in a cross stream of turbolaser fire that ripped through its top solar fin. Kydus thought he saw Ocean train her cannons on him, but it was a ship of the same class, and other Imperial warships attacked it with the same pack tactic, subjecting its shields to a punishing combined stream of firepower that overloaded the defenses. Kydus saw the moment that the shield failed. The hull was peppered simultaneously in 20 places at once as small cannon fire from Imperial assault fighters suddenly passed through and made devastating contact. He had the GA on the back foot. It was numbers, always numbers, and now he had more.
"Where are you now, Jedi? Don't want to get the stealth X's scratched, do you?"
"Ah," said Lokeson, still at his post after all these hours. "Sir, more ships dropping out of hyperspace."
Kydus turned, eager to see what else the Imperials had thrown into the battle.
What's that?
He didn't recognize the vessel, and it didn't carry the Imperial livery.
An auxiliary? A fleet tender?
Ships began popping out of hyperspace in flares of white light, and as the transponders began kicking in and the sensors pinged others, Kydus knew the Jedi were back with one of their mind games. He was on the receiving end of another elaborate Jedi mind assault, or at least his crew were, and now he hoped everyone understood how very real the Falanasi illusions were in the hands of a master, how they registered with all the senses, and even sensors, if the illusionist was powerful enough.
It's Skywalker,
Kydus said.
Try to filter these apparitions out from the real threats. It's hard, but that's how he wants to decoy you, to get you firing carelessly.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Clearly, Lokeson and another junior officer, Dove Horlow, were seeing what he was. So this was a large-scale illusion registering on many minds, not just projected at one like his had been.
Did someone raid an aerospace museum? What the stang is that?
Steady, said Kydus. It looks real, but beware.
None of the ship's transponders registered pennant codes on the system. There was only so far that Luke could go in embroidering this fantasy then, and the two young officers tried to identify the vessels by class alone, as if it was some cadet instruction at the Naval Academy. There were now two Crusader cruisers, a Victory-class Star Destroyer, and a squadron of TIE Fighters. A Venator and two Republic-class ships dropped out at exactly the same moment like a choreographed party surprise of the very worst kind.
Sir,
it was very convincing. It was exactly like the previous attempt, except more imaginative, and the feeling of real mass and power was detectable now.
I think this might be real. Get me the senior Moff, and ask if those are his militia forces.
The motley fleet kept growing, falling out of history into Kydus's here and now, and their weapons were real. The sensor ops team was flat out trying to assess the battle elements ranging against them.
Fearfek, those are assassin corvettes. How many more? I thought the scimitars had gone for scrap by now. This is crazy. Where did all these crates come from?
An assassin broke out of formation, blinding white power streaming from its cannon. A GA carrier moving X-wings into position exploded, the whole aft section swallowed in a ball of expanding light. It was no illusion. Lokeson seemed to have had enough of humoring his commander.
That's really dead, sir. Sorry to argue, but that's real. It's absolutely real.
I'm losing concentration. I've got to stay sharp. Where in the name of the Force did these come from? Yes, it is. So come about and ready torpedoes.
Flaring into existence like the avenging swoop hawk that the Jacipri sages said would herald the end of the universe, an Imperial Star Destroyer was now on a ramming course for the Anakin Solo. It had an identifiable pennant code.
Sir, it's I-2... Oh, that can't be right, said Dove Horlow. Someone's doing a psyops job on us, real metal or not.
Kydus took a slow breath. He recognized it too, but this time he believed.
She was never confirmed destroyed.
It was a vessel that had been flagship to the legendary admirals of modern history, and fought at some pivotal battles. The veteran ship was looking a lot tidier than it had at the Battle of Bastion. She was fully restored.
Chimera,
said Kydus.
Sir, someone's emptied the whole galactic junkyard and then some.
Kytus felt such focus and long-suppressed venom in the Force that he almost thought he'd detected a Sith. But this was mundane darkness, simmering, long-nursed grievances, longing for justice, diffuse longing, any justice, a piercing shaft of sorrow right through it. The sensation would have fascinated him had he not been more preoccupied with how much trouble was in his path.
"You know what we girls are like," said a slightly rasping patrician voice over the open comm. "We just can't throw anything away in case it comes back into fashion years later."
"You have me at a disadvantage, madam."
"My apologies, Colonel Solo. Where are my manners? This is Admiral Dalla, flag officer of the Maw Irregular Fleet, and I ask that you stand down and leave Fondorian space now."
I knew she was back on the list, but the Moths need to improve their intelligence gathering. As Chief of State of the Galactic Alliance, I'm afraid I can't do that.
Kytus summoned his overstretched battle meditation skills.
Flight, stand by 5-7 and 5-9 squadrons.
"As you please, sir," said Dalla. "Maw Fleet, patch into Admiral Neothel's Combat Information Center, and give the lady a hand."
A Moff's voice came over the comm, unhelpfully late.
"We knew Pelion had recalled her for something underhanded."
"Good afternoon, you insignificant little man."
The satisfied polish to Dalla's voice was tarnished by some pain and regret, though. Kytus heard it.
"This one's for Gil Pelion and Legius."
Chimera opened fire. The battle with Dalla's scrapyard fleet had begun. Mandalorian boarding party. Assault ship Orar approaching Imperial Star Destroyer Bloodfin, accompanied by Trakad.
"What would you like to be today?"
Orade said, scrolling through the list of spoof transponder codes for the assault vessels.
"Hopelessly lost Nalastian freighter? Fuel Bowser? Death Star?"
"HNE Combat Broadcast Unit," Kerid said. "Nobody swerves to avoid them, but they're not tactical targets. Plenty around, and they get in stupid positions."
Fett had to admire Dalla's timing. Imperial ships that had been protecting Bloodfin from predatory strikes while the battle raged inside her now had urgent problems of their own with the arrival of the Maw fleet.
"A lot of trouble to go to for a few Moths," Fett said.
He now had a link to Bloodfin's mutineers. He thought that term was a delicate legal point if their admiral had been assassinated.
"Raj, what's your situation?"
"We've rigged the drives and weapons to blow if anyone tries to board her," Raj said. "Once the troops breach our bulkheads, we're finished. We're not equipped for close combat down here."
"As long as you don't try to repel us, we'll be fine,"
Fett said.
"Who have you got on board?"
"The senior Moffs on the flag officer's staff. And their boss is Keel now, I suppose. The rest of the Moffs with command status are still with their ships."
"So you left the B-team Moffs at home. Well, I'm not fussed if I remove them dead or alive. Can we breach the hull and let in some nice cool vacuum without killing you?"
"No, they'll be in the command center. The Citadel's hardened anyway. We've activated the fire control bulkheads to seal off the compartments around the Citadel. If you go in via the replenishment hatches, that'll put you much closer to the command center, and you won't have to fight for every meter if you run into company."
"And you've got a Jedi on board,"
Jaina said quietly.
Tahiri Vela.
I think she's forfeited her lightsaber now, Solo,
said Fett.
I meant that she might be extra trouble.
Bloodfin was effectively dead in the water, with all weapons and propulsion offline. It was just a matter of getting to her without attracting too much attention, then boarding, and then neutralizing the troops who were trying to regain control of the ship. The Moffs were stuck in a metal box. They either had to find some way off the ship or regain control before Neothel, Dalla, or even the Fondorians blew her out of space. Jaina was subdued. It was a bad deal with Pelion. She had a look in her eye that said she could easily have been a woman who'd embark on a bloody vendetta if the Jedi hadn't educated that natural human reflex out of her.
I shouldn't have let you hear Dalla's recording,
Fett said.
But when you're hunting scum, Solo, recognizing the voices is part of making sure you kill the right barv.
I'm not squeamish, she said.
Myrta, helmet in her lap, gave Fett a look. It could have been leave her alone, or even try harder.
It was still a man you'd known for a long time, he said, and a Jedi killed him.
It's bad enough that Tahiri did it, but it's hard to think of anyone waiting outside a room until someone's dead.
Fett saw her point. He tried to work out how many beings he'd killed.
No, can't even guess. Have to check the archived accounts. Give it up.
And he couldn't remember leaving someone to die the way Pelion had been left. The barbs should have finished him off cleanly. He didn't much care for the Moff class anyway, and Dalla had made clear what he had to do. Nobody was familiar with the Remnant's new turbulent class pocket star destroyers, but Dalla had transmitted a deck layout, and its two hangar decks opened at the stern. Fett located the replenishment access.
Rige, where are the troops?
As far as we can tell, apart from the ones pounding us, they've positioned them at the main exterior hatches. They were relying on the frigates to prevent boarding.
I think Bloodfin just lost top cover.
And look out for Jason Solo. He's probably planning to extract Lieutenant Vela. Good luck, Fett.
Fett turned to Jaina.
Added complication. He'll be facing the same challenges that we are.
I can't locate Jason in the Force, but I can find her, so she'll be his transponder.
You think he'll come for her?
If it's not too much trouble for him.
Carid leaned across Orar's console to the chart and put a marker on the Anakin Solo.
Not that he'll bring that alongside, but it's comforting to keep an eye on him.
Rige,
Fett said,
stand by. Orade, you join Zeramar in the Trakad.
Orar was a little under 40 meters long, and in the shoal of ships, 10, 20, 30 times larger, she was a small target to pick up visually. A transponder trace showing her to be an HNE broadcast unit getting way too close to the action in this chaotic battle meant that by the time anyone checked what she was doing coming so close to Bloodfin's stern, it would be too late. Trakad, even smaller, trailed behind her. Orar crept along the port side to settle over the replenishment hatches and clamped herself to the hull. The belly hatch of the assault ship opened, and they were looking at an aperture not quite 2 meters wide. It was a poor access point, and a good place to get trapped. As soon as Fett slid into the hatch and put his glove on the metal, he could feel distant vibrations from something pounding away inside Bloodfin. Someone was trying to smash through a hatch. Fett hoped the engineers and weapons techs could hold back the shock troopers a little longer. The replenishment hatch opened onto a storage compartment with access to the main deck of the destroyer. Jaina emerged from the hatch in the middle of a stream of armored troops,
a small figure in gray, with a lightsaber hilt in one hand and a blaster in the other.
"I'll locate Tahiri," she said.
The ship was in semi-darkness, lit only by dim green emergency lighting in most passageways. With visor enhancements, Fett and his troops could see a lot more. Jaina shot off down the passage with all the confidence of someone in broad daylight. Fett found that if he thought of Jedi as having built-in armor and HUDs, then he didn't find them quite so unsettlingly different.
"It's not about their powers. It's about their attitude. The powers, I can cope with those."
Kubariat, the Jedi agent he'd worked with in the Vong'ez Wars, had been reassuringly matter-of-fact about his abilities, and hadn't had any qualms about using a blaster when the situation demanded. It might not have made any difference to the outcome of a fight, but Fett was better able to see what he was doing. He had trusted him more. Fett and Carid reached the hatch that opened directly onto the command center section. Jaina was already there, flat against the bulkhead.
"I'm sensing about 30 beings in there, and definitely a Jedi," she said. "They've barricaded themselves in. The only way they're getting out is via the same hatch as we enter."
"Let's do it, then."
"And she'll probably have sensed me already."
Fett didn't specify it. Once those hatches were open, he and his troops would kill everything that moved inside. If Jason Solo wanted to extract his apprentice, he would have to do it fast.
"In three," said Carid. "One, two, go!"
A stream of concentrated blaster fire took the hatch off its clips, and it fell into the passage beyond, wedged on the combing like a safety ramp. Fett laid down covering fire as six of his Ori Ramakade rushed in and dived on the deck, firing from prone positions and meeting a returning hail of blaster bolts. The Moffs weren't going down without a fight. Fett plunged into the smoke and stabbing bolts of energy, suddenly realizing how much more punishment his Beskar armor plates absorbed than the old Durasteel ones. In the noise and chaos, with even his HUD display sometimes overwhelmed by the volume of flashing blaster fire, he was unnerved to see Jaina Solo, a small woman by any standards, deflecting bolts with a lightsaber and with nothing but a gray fabric flight suit for protection. He'd have to remember to tell her one day how impressive it looked. For the time being, all he could register was the direction of incoming fire, and Jaina, cursing loud enough for him to hear over the crack and slap of blaster discharge, saying that Tahiri had vanished. Galactic Warship Ocean, off Fondor. Chimera cut a swath through the battlefield and headed straight for the Anakin Solo, firing turbo lasers.
"They always say that Dala tore up the strategy books."
Neathel was still assessing the strength and firepower of the eclectic fleet that had just fallen into her lap. Her immediate guess was that she now had 30% more hulls than the Moff Jason fleet, as she now thought of it.
"She looks as if she's going to ram him. I'd get out of her way,"
Macon said. Several other commanders in Jason's fleet must have had the same idea. They broke off attacks and headed for the Anakin Solo. There were now six warships converging on the Chimera, and Neathel tried to guess Dala's strategy. One advantage of having a completely unexpected and diverse fleet suddenly emerge in theater was that it plunged everything into chaos, and each commander had to pause and take stock. But that included Dala's allies. It was crowded space. Neathel had an impression of an ancient maritime battle on Naboo, when ships had been packed too close together to move or fire safely.
"Yes, she's going to turn as late as she can," said Neathel. "Even so, I wouldn't be the frigate on that bearing there." "Did she say Maw Irregular Fleet?" "She did.
One destroyer, bearing down on Chimera's port beam, appeared to be targeting her bridge, and a cruiser was on an intercept course from starboard. Chimera opened fire on both simultaneously, with apparently little effect, and held her course.
"What was that, Vio?"
Neothel asked.
"Turbo laser?"
"Unknown, ma'am."
"This isn't the time to admire what she's had done in refit, but I haven't seen anything like that. Sensors, tell me what Chimera's got by way of armaments. I just hope this isn't some massive bluff, and she's just scrambled everything from the breaker's yard, because Jason will sense that very fast."
Neothel, still monitoring the developing collision, moved to watch one of the holocam feeds from the remotes nearest the Anakin Solo. Chimera was letting smaller vessels take potshots at her, which her shields shrugged off, and then she simply targeted the same two vessels that she'd returned fire upon moments earlier. Neothel waited for signs of impact. What she saw instead was the hull of one ship deforming and then simply bursting apart like a bag of grain meal, with no accompanying explosion. The aft section was intact, but there was a large enough hole in the hull to span five decks, maybe more, and expose compartments to vacuum. It was an oddly silent, unfit end for the cruiser. It rang a bell with Neothel.
"Oh, I think Dala's brought some of her toys with her,"
Macon said. He'd been watching in silence.
"Yes, I do believe she has some novel weapons."
Neothel calmed the Maw flagship.
"Ocean to Chimera. Thank you for your assistance. Are you armed with unconventional weapons?"
"Ocean, confirm that. We have metal crystal phase shifters, among other things."
MCPS weapons altered crystalline structures. An area of the unfortunate destroyer's hull had simply fractured under the stresses and started to break up. It was as good as a laser strike, but penetrated shields.
"Thank you, Chimera. Dala's dusted off some of the research projects from the Maw installation,"
Macon said.
"No telling what she's got now." "Well, I think we should be telling someone, because that would dent my morale somewhat if I were the enemy."
But Dala was sending her own unspoken messages around Jason's fleet. Other destroyers were leaving ruptured, dead GA ships in their wake, with a weapon that conventional shields couldn't counter. Jason surely had to be able to detect what Neothel could, and more with his force senses, and he would know that he was dealing with tactics and weapons he'd never faced before. And the Anakin Solo was now exposed. The battle group ranged around it was being picked off, in an eerily peaceful but equally lethal way. No spectacular explosions breaching hulls, but large voids from crumbling, altered metals that had lost their strength. There was no way of telling how many ships had MCPS, but that was all part of the tactic, the uncertainty. GA and Imperial vessels were literally bursting open all across the Fondor Theater, and any sane commander with one of Dala's vessels approaching would wonder if he was next. Neothel chose her moment to calm all ships, hoping that those who'd rushed to Jason's side had kept open their links to the flagship.
"Commanders of the GA 3rd and 4th fleets, who have chosen not to accept my command," she said, "this is your opportunity to rejoin the legitimate forces of the Galactic Alliance. Power down your weapons and withdraw now to the designated fleet assembly area. I will not, repeat, not take disciplinary action against any commander who withdraws now."
Neothel sat back and waited to see who would rally to her. And she kept her gaze on the Anakin Solo. to see what Jason would do.